It's the end of our multi-episode arcs here on Need Your Please, a heinous trip at Warp 5. My name is Joseph.
I'm your co-host. I'm co-host wearing some of our own merchandise.
Yeah, I like it. I got mine done. I should have put mine on. I also got... Peter presently has a Vidra Please hoodie on, and I also now have a Vidra Please hoodie. And it was a little late to the game for us to buy them, but we were prompted by the fact that, the store got taken off its URL because no one bought our stuff.
Meh. Well, you know, we've let it go out with a bang.
It's all good.
I do like the idea for when it goes back up of the I survived the decon chamber scene and all I got was this lousy series finale.
Oh, that is a great joke. And also, I do want to shout out our graphic designer that did all of our DS9 or did all of our Enterprise era stuff. Did a great job. Kevin is a stand-up dude. He decided to make merch on his own, put it up on his own website. You know, we're a small podcast, so we never expected to actually sell very much of it, and we weren't making a profit anyway because it was all made to order. I think there's going to be more that he's going to make with the DS9 stuff. So just keep an eye out for that. I'm hopefully
this is a guy who hates free time and wants to throw it right in the trash.
Yeah. You know what? And we're right there with him in the trash and we appreciate him.
By the way, I'm your co-host, Peter.
Yes. Yes.
In case you somehow are fresh to this podcast and decided to start here of all places.
And before we get to where that is, I do want to make some, I guess, housekeeping notes for our regular listeners. And we do appreciate you. We want to let you know how things are going to go. So, as alluded to, we'll be doing DS9 soon. It's going to be a big, big change. We're going to make a big push to reintroduce ourselves to the listening public since DS9 is such a popular television show. And we figure we might wind up with some more folks along the ride with us. So, as a result, we're going to take a little bit of time off, but not really. So you're hearing this on April 11th, 2024. There'll be, of course, a Enterprise series rip the week after on April 18th for you to listen to. But we'll be gone the next week. There'll be no more episodes in April. And we'll be every other week in May. And two of those episodes are going to be actually Patreon episodes that have been kind of on offer for a while. So one is going to be our review of Event Horizon, and the other is going to be our review of Lower Decks Season 4, mostly the Voyager episode of Lower Decks, but we do touch on a few other things, including, as you put it, it feels like you're at a pool and something brushed up against your dick and you're not quite sure if you liked it or not. One of my favorite lines you've ever issued. And then on the 30th of May, so the last week there in May, we'll actually have a DS9 prep episode. So Peter and I are going to watch a bunch of TNG episodes that are basically lore dumps for things that become important in DS9. And this includes like the Bajorans, the Cardassians, the Maquis. So we're going to bone up on all of that stuff and see what TNG kind of tells you about them. And we'll be ripping into Emissary starting the first week of June. So June 6th.
I'm actually really excited to start watching TNG. It's been a long time since I've sat down and done it, and I'm very interested to see what it's like watching it through the lens of this podcast.
I will say that the only bad part about doing the show is that because I don't know if we're... I knew we were going to do DS9, and so I have not watched it in some time, which hurts me because I used to rewatch it all the time. And I also have stopped watching TNG for similar reasons.
Stopped watching TNG because of Picard season one.
Oh, okay. You were just like, you were off it. Like, I can't look at this anymore.
I can't look at him anymore.
But Picard season three allows you to go back and look at it now.
We'll see.
But thank you for sticking with us here as we got through Enterprise, endured Enterprise, survived Enterprise, survived the decon chamber at least. But all we got was a lousy season finale. And so that means we're here to send season four off as it deserves with a classic rip. Before we get into any awards, though, Peter, I think we need to kind of just discuss what we thought of what we saw. I called it one of the best seasons of Trek ever made. What do you think that holds up?
Yeah, I don't want to get into series rip thoughts.
Right.
But season four as its own event, very strong. And, you know, it's a nice contrast to season three, where season three was highly serialized, 24 style, you know, almost day by day in some instances. Season four gets to be, I think, the show that Enterprise should have been from the very beginning. And it is a strong collection of stories pertinent to the world of Star Trek as a whole. This should have been a world builder franchise. And we've talked about what Brian Fuller was going to do with the original game plan on Discovery, which was kind of like an anthology deal.
Correct.
And I think season four really proved that you could have jumped around quite a bit over Enterprise's existence and told some really compelling, great stories. And I think you could make an argument, if it wasn't for season one and season two kind of laying the groundwork on who these people were, that it would have been hard to catch up with, you know, what the crew is and how they're supposed to be. Except season one and season two fucking sucked, and they didn't really develop any of these characters except for like two of them. And you probably could have just gone right into this format and told those character stories as you were also telling great world universe arc stories as well.
I tried to do some research in advance of having this rip tonight, Peter, and I happened across some quotes from Manny Coto. I'm not exactly sure when this interview happened. I think it was more contemporaneous to Enterprise's fourth season than something that happened later in his life.
This wasn't you doing the Ouija board by yourself?
No. I was saving for that for you and me. You know, I don't want to take that away from you. You've got so many questions and I want to see them answered.
Can only summon a soul so many times before you get, degradation. It's
diminishing returns. Yeah. You got to be careful.
The last thing I want to do is accidentally obliviate Manny Coto because ask him too many questions across too many nights.
He deserves better than that. He said at one point when he made season four and they knew that this was almost certainly going to be the end, that they abandoned the dictates that they were given by the UPN, and that was part of their success. And this is definitely going to get us into series rip territory as well, talking about why the show failed, which it obviously did. But what Manny Coto said was, we started making episodes that people who like Trek would like because no one else was watching anymore.
Absolutely.
So apparently some of the dictates from the UPN was to keep it very episodic and to keep it very like you could just drop in and drop out. Same as Voyager, right? Like, don't want to have too much continuity. And then they did the 24 style show for season three. Didn't quite work. Got themselves season four and they're like, fuck it. Let's just actually make good Star Trek and not give a damn if people don't care about why Andorians and Tellarites learn to like each other. Because Trek fans want to see that shit, so let's do it.
Again, and it's the same pot and pan we bang together over and over with Discovery and Picard and, you know, this other shit. You know what the formula is.
Yeah.
You see the cult following on original series. You see the amazing return on investment out of Next Generation. There is a viewership base that is there or used to be there inherently. And all you had to do was dangle the thing in front of them and they would walk over hot coals to get it.
Mm-hmm.
The new Discovery, new Trek stuff, I understand why they strayed away from the formula. Why they, you know, are actively rejecting the old viewer base and trying to build a new demographic.
To what level? To no success, right?
And that's its own thing. But you go back to, early 2000s, why foist this ridiculous mandate on Enterprise that just goes against the grain? Why was there a sentiment in the writer's room that we're making Star Trek that is not for Trek fans?
Well, I have a bit of a theory, at least. And it's because season 4 of Enterprise reminds me of season 3 of Picard in a lot of ways. It was a leftover made for no money by people who really liked the product and understood how to make it. Yeah. And we've talked about how Trek thrives with less money, not more, because it requires actors to kind of have to fill in the gaps. And that ends up being far more effective for a show that's going to be very intellectual and talky. And that's true. But also, I think Suits just never have understood this franchise. They've never understood it. You know, Desilu, essentially Lucille Ball, had to fight to get the show on to begin with, right? It kind of got, like, inherited by CBS when they bought Desilu, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they ran it for a couple more seasons, and then it petered out. When it came back, it had to scrape to get back, right? Like, TNG launched by stitching together hundreds of separate individual syndication deals. So Suits didn't get it either. They didn't get DS9, but they knew it worked and it was successful. So they wanted it on UPN to launch their damn network with Voyager. What happened there? Oh, well, you can't make it so that it's something you have to keep watching. You got to be able to just pick it up whenever, you gotta keep it really easy to get into.
Everything you just said, and then you hold it up against the golden age of television. You hold it up against Game of Thrones, where that is the antithetical statement.
Right.
And it's like, you couldn't be further from the truth. We're deep into series rip stuff here, but all the stuff we've talked about, the changing landscape, the introduction of DVR, prevalence of DVDs, and just, I think that all chalked all that bad corporate exec input up to not understanding what the landscape had become or what it was turning into.
Yeah, I think he had a bunch of executives who didn't know what this was supposed to look like. And when they wound up finding a way to make one more season because UPN knew they needed one more programming season before they were going to wind up combining with the WB, that's really why it happened. And they did it, gave them half the money to do it. They're like, fuck it, let's make what we want to make. And it turns out that's always the right call. It's a bit of a spoiler. When we get into the worst episodes of the season, I have 3. But those are the only 3 bad ones. I mean, that's hard. That's a hard road to hoe. They made 22 episodes of Star Trek this season. 19 of them are good. Wow.
Well, let's get into it then, Joe. Let's start talking awards. Let's start talking memorable moments. Where do you want to start?
Best character is the first one on the list, and I want to get into this because you have a tendency to name guest stars for this. And I will say that this season might be the only season that we've done together, you know, of the 11 total, that I would kind of agree with that approach, because the arcs process made guest stars more important. I will say that my favorite character was Archer for the first and only time. I think you can actually make a case that it's Archer. This season is really his season. It's his storyline into becoming, you know, the pathfinder and president of the Federation, to be the arch diplomat. And he really pulls that off in large and small ways, from how he deals with the Andorians and the Tellarites and binding them together. And he solves all the fucking Vulcans problems, you know, while still navigating like space hazards, like all of the stuff with the augments. And Archer never, I think, measures up to even the heights of Captain Janeway in his performance overall. Scott Bakula just was never quite right for playing Archer. But he was the best character of this season.
Who'd we pick for season 3?
You know, I don't remember.
because season three,
probably Trip. I know I probably picked Trip. I'll say that for sure. I really liked his performances in season three. So
Archer gets his head out of his ass in season three, and starts, I don't want to say coming into his own, but he's not the miserable piece of shit that he is season one and season two. But through season three, he felt like he was still not a victim, but at the mercy of other. He was a reactive captain. He was a captain whose hand was being forced, and he was not making proactive decisions. He was having to react to miserable situations around him and being abused in the process. He was a victim in season three versus season four, where he is doing things on his own terms. He's wisened up, and he is playing the game at the same level or beyond the other people that he's encountering.
He becomes the character you kind of expected him to be from the beginning.
And that's, again, more season stuff, is why did you waste the first two seasons with this miserable rendition of Archer when there's nothing wrong with this guy that we're getting here? He's not a complete character, right? We're not talking about Tuvok, where there's no good stories to tell with this version of the guy. And I think it would have been very easy to introduce a captain at this level within the first three episodes, because he makes plenty of bad decisions, but he's showing common sense and he's not comically stupid or annoying or miserable. So I don't think you're wrong. This is the first season that really lets you enjoy Jonathan Archer, I think.
Yeah.
And find reward in watching him take his actions and cheer along with him.
Plenty of close seconds, in my opinion. You could say Phlox. If you were going to pick a guest star, you could pick Saval. I think Saval had a really strong season. I thought that the Vulcan episodes did a lot for him. It really is his arc, dealing with like the inside outside game of all the corruption on Vulcan. But in the end, I give it to Archer. How about you?
I know we're not really supposed to pick the side characters or whatever, but Soong was such a great character for a million reasons. Gave Brett Spiner, I think, a chance to finally spread his wings in the right way and show that full range of emotions. I would almost say that Soong is a more compelling character to me than Data, which is weird when you think about it, but it was just this rich, textured thing, a respectable, quote unquote, bad guy. But if we're talking main cast, you said all the right stuff with Archer, and I think Phlox is right there 50-50. He's had a great character journey. He gets some super choice stuff in several big episodes. I think the Klingon
episodes are particularly good for him.
He's been a consistently good character, and them being able to steer season four into this guy learning compassion and, all the good parts are still there. It's not weak as shit worthy, but maybe a plot botch for later, the fact that they never go back to his home life or any of that stuff. And I guess that's just a sacrifice of trying to tell the big stories to wrap the series up.
Yeah, that's like a lack of time, right? Like maybe if you had a whole full season order there, you could have snuck one in like that as an extra episodic one. But they made the choices they made. Maybe they could have done that instead of Daedalus, which was the most meh episode of the season. I would say that Soong's a very respectable choice, by the way. Yeah. He has a whole arc in his three episodes. There's a whole rise and fall that he gets to portray, up to and including his self-recognition of his culpability for his mistakes. And I mean, Cold Station 12, I think, is both of our favorite episodes of the season.
Hey, spoilers.
So that's all him. It's like 100, like it's all him. And actually it's a lot of Archer in that too.
And so, he haunts the rest of the series too. Again, he gets specific callbacks in Affliction, or I think it was Affliction.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a real mover in this episode or this season. Going back to Phlox's racist son, it's kind of highlighted something. Season one, season two, you had these A plot, B plots. And these are complex episodes. Like, there's some of them. I think it's the General Uncle Phil episode, the last one. There's, like, I think we counted five or six different plots going. But you don't have this, I would call it a Voyager-style A plot, B plot, where they are taking place sometimes seemingly in completely different, like, time zones, right?
Right.
And I was going to say, like, Daedalus would have been a great opportunity to have Phlox reconnects with his racist son as that B plot. But season four, all of the plots, even when there's like six different plots, are all playing within the same direction to whatever the meta plot of that episode is. And that's interesting that you don't have that, like, the B plot has absolutely nothing to do with A plot anymore. I guess they abandoned that really in season three.
Yeah, I mean, once they found narrative cohesion, they stopped doing it that way. And your plots, as you said, they had to be more proximal than totally divorced. Like, Hoshi's trying to find Reed's favorite dessert at the same time the ship's being invaded by butt probe aliens. Like, stop doing that. That's good. We don't want to do that anymore.
The nutty thing about all of that, though, is this isn't a fledgling TV show where they had to find their footing. You know, they're coming in off of years and years and years of Trek, and for them to have fallen into that goofy footing in the first place.
I mean, that's something that maybe we do need to say about specifically about season four. What a difference bringing in fresh creatives make. Like, Braga and Berman were so tapped out. They didn't fucking have the juice to do this anymore. Everybody else left them, right? They did not have Brian Fuller anymore. They don't have Jerry Taylor anymore. You know, they didn't even have Kenneth Biller, really. Like, none of the DS9 guys ever showed back up. They were exhausted. And who brought the show back? Fresh, new writing talent. Like that married couple that did, like, the Stevens couple.
Garfield Stevens.
The Garfield Stevens couple. Were great writers. Hell, Terry Metalis turned in a couple banger scripts in season three.
Yeah.
And, you know, the production assistant got to write episodes and they were good. Like, when the fuck does that happen? And Manny Coto, who figured out, you know, I want to tell Trek stories. I've been in this world for a while. Like, that's the kind of the interesting part of what could have happened here, which was, could have had a new generation of creatives, of people who came up watching Star Trek, who were fans of Star Trek in the Berman era, making it. And they were just maybe starting to see that come to fruition just as it ended. You know, Metalis was in his 20s, and he's the archetype of exactly the guy who could have wound up taking the torch and continuing it on rather than let it sputter and die like it did.
Before we move on from the best character, you know, the Phlox Archer duo there, I think they're the best. I think a big part of that, though, is no one else is really given the room to step up. And I think a big part of that is a lot of these episodes where the multi-episode arcs. And again, there were such big guest star roles in that, you know, a big running joke through season four was that Hoshi and Mayweather just didn't exist.
Right.
And, you know, if you're going to sideline characters, those are the two obvious ones. I wish Reed had been sidelined more. But, yeah, you know, Soong, Suval, Shran, Romulan Admiral Bruja Primogen, you know, these guys had massive amounts of screen real estate to get out there and play. And it's great because season one and season two, and to a certain extent, season three really were. I take that back. Season three had some really good reoccurring characters. But again, when you're trying to build worlds, build a universe, tell the story of the foundation of the Federation and stuff, you need to have people involved that are more than just your bridge crew, and giving those guys the room to breathe, those side characters the room to breathe, definitely did come at the cost of strangling the main cast's screen time, which would be
It is interesting to look back at Voyager and note that they did a much better job of trying to make sure every single one of those characters got plot and got story. Even if we hated that Harry Kim always had an episode or two a season, he did. They never fucking forgot about his ass. They made sure he was always embarrassed by some fucking ridiculous circumstance, but they used him, right? And they just, they gave up on trying to find stories for Hoshi and Mayweather in season three and didn't look back.
Delta Flyers, again, what Robbie McNeil says, you know, that the cast hated any time they brought in guest actors and that there was an animosity, the way I took it, when they weren't main cast focused episodes. And I think doing it that way is to the detriment of the show because it gets boring, or at least with, you know, certain characters, it gets boring. So I'm wondering when they went into Enterprise, if they were like, listen, we're not giving everybody their 15 minutes of fame each season. Like, fuck this. We're going to do whatever we want.
Yeah, we're going to bring in Jeff Combs. Too cool shit, and we don't care.
Right call.
Who was the worst character of the season, Peter? I think there's like a cop-out choice, and there's the correct choice.
Well, what's your cop-out choice?
The guy from Daedalus. Dr. Transporter.
I can't even fucking count.
I mean, it's like, it is singularly the worst performance of the episode, so he kind of sucks. So I would say that's the cop-out. I think it's actually Reed. Margin smaller, but still Reed.
What's making you push Reed?
While they finally gave him plot that makes sense for his character, first, I think it's just boneheaded to think that he would not tell Archer when he got like told to act against Archer's orders by Section 31, right? I just don't buy. They never gave you a reason in the story to understand why Reed wouldn't go, I'm going to tell my boss about this. Fuck it. Like, I saved the whole galaxy with him. I know I can trust them. I'm just going to trust them. And if these clandestine guys don't like it, I don't care. What are they going to do? Right? We're heroes. We saved the whole planet. They named high schools after us. You know, they should be thinking twice about asking me to do things I don't want to do. It's just total miss on that. And Reed still kind of just sucks. I mean, he's just an annoying, preening, whiny British man who doesn't know how to hold a gun, literally up to the last episode. He just kept sucking. Just he sucked less.
I think that season four is the best season for Reed,
yeah,
which is an incredibly low bar. What you're talking about with him not disclosing his affiliation with Section 31, or at least telling, you know, Archer the truth about what was going on with Section 31's involvement, like, I buy it. And they could have made a bigger deal out of this, or at least framed it in a better light. Like, he came to a fork in the road and he picked the wrong way. And I think it's a defensible position of, you know, I agreed to this clandestine thing. I wanted to be a spy. At least I thought I still wanted to be a spy. And it wasn't until I actually started doing this stuff that I realized that I'm a different person, that this stuff is wrong, and then have him grow past that point. And instead, he kind of gets this get out of free jail card, literally, because they have to zip line trip back on the ship. But I buy it. And that's the real character story that you need to tell Reed. Not, hey, I've got this shadowy background. It's, hey, I'm done being a lizard person and I want to be a good guy, Federation Starfleet officer. Hoshi and Mayweather, which are easy to occupy that role, you can't even count them in because they had such little screen time, and the screen time they do get is sometimes pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
I don't think there's anybody this season that I really had to roll my eyes and be like, I am not enjoying myself. And I think that's less about the characters, and I think it's more about good writers at the helm making scripts that keep me engaged for longer.
Even the surprise Nazi villains were like, fine, being Nazi villains, like, I don't care for the story that they tried to tell. All the Goombas, you know, in New York.
Bobby Bacala and Joey Peeps.
Yeah, just fine. They were all fine. Their characters weren't the problem. That was actually the most enjoyable part about watching those episodes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I guess really it's not... I'm hard-pressed to say the worst character is a guest actor. And that's the issue. It wasn't Dr. Emery Emmett or whatever his name was, a father of transporters. He wasn't a bad character. It was a bad actor who did not bring the right energy to the character. And what I think was a decent script, a good story and a great resource episode. And he shit the bed on that. So I'm not going to call him the worst character, but he was the worst actor. And even then, it's not like he was complete dog shit. He just,
yeah, it was still like a pretty like meh episode, almost good. Just kind of like missed on that. But what didn't miss is that our boy Travis Mayweather had some excellent scenes this season. He didn't have an episode, but he had some moments. And I think we want to take a moment to say, let's appreciate Travis Mayweather here in season 4. What was his best scene?
It's interesting because he's got a lot of like lulzy scenes.
He does.
But it, you know, him snap kicking someone in the head
during a coup.
Fucking terrific, right? Yeah. But I think
snap kicks are good.
To give what's his name, Anthony Montgomery.
Yeah.
Like credit after years of shitting on his character and or his act, his wooden board acting. You put this guy near his bread and butter, which is daytime TV drama, and you get a completely different product. This guy is completely unbelievable as a person born in space who is a great Starship pilot, but as someone dealing with rocky personal relationships, he's a fish in water. Before it was him dealing with his estranged family back on their transport ship. This season, it's his 90s hottie ex-girlfriend wanting to reconnect, fuck around in the shuttle a little bit, and ultimately betray his trust and drag his name through the mud.
Travis Mayweather may be a titan of physical of might, but he fell prey to the same thing that black men everywhere fall prey to, and that is a duplicitous white woman. So, it's a good story arc. I you know, got to respect that he and Tucker, blew up a shuttlecraft. The only time a shuttlecraft was exploded on Enterprise to bingo a bunch of fucking Nazis, literally. But to me, his best scene of the entire season is when he decided to solo all the drunks in the bar in Home. You don't need to bring like a knife or a gun to a bar fight. You just bring Travis Mayweather and he's just going to take three dudes by himself while you dramatically swing haymakers with the one guy you've got to deal with. I think that speaks to Travis Mayweather and his capacity perfectly.
So he's good at domestic strife and beating ass.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think that's what we've learned through 4 seasons of Enterprise is Travis Mayweather, when he is doing romance and doing fights, good. Anything else, bad.
Minus rock climbing. He's a great rock climber.
He's a great rock climber, yeah.
Speaking of climbing on some rocks. Hey, look at that. It's a sexual exploitation award. This is a newer entry for us.
This is an interesting. So Enterprise definitely deserves the distinction of being the horniest Trek series ever made. We have a whole bit I think we're going to go into for quite a while next week when we discuss the series as a whole. But this season, less exploitive. Very horny, but not as exploitive.
What a weird distinction to make, too. And it's one that you don't... it's weird to have that conversation about Trek. And sexual exploitation is the Achilles heel of Enterprise, and I think it's what doomed this fucking thing from the start.
Yeah, it like literally prevented it from being a success in the premiere.
You beheaded probably half of your viewership with that decon chamber scene, and then poisoned the water supply with bad scripts, bad plots, and
yeah. We'll unpack this more next week. But
what you're saying right now, like, it doesn't clean up its act at all. Like the titties, the abs, the ass shots.
More than ever. More than ever.
Yeah. And it's interesting too that like none of that, for all the titties and ass shots in this thing, they still don't feel as blatant as what they did to 7 and 9.
Like, yeah.
Maybe it's because Jolene Blaylock's boobs or bra padding wasn't as big as 7. I don't know. Like, that's its own thing with Voyager. But yeah, despite the fact we've got Orion slave girls, midriff Jolene Blaylock's abs, other Orion slave girls.
Hoshi having sex with every character that she possibly can.
The augments and all their stuff, like, it still feels less cheap. I mean, maybe that's it's not just,
yeah, it's not cheap. As exploitive. The Orions, as much as they are very, very, very scantily clad and absolutely intentionally focused on their sexuality as a plot point, I do not consider Bound to be exploitive in the slightest. I get the story that it told. I liked it.
Did we ever get any female listener feedback on what they actually thought of?
No, we never did. Maybe we did. Maybe Jamie said something. I don't know. I'd have to take a look back. I know we solicited it, but
at the same time, I didn't see anybody rushing up and being like, "Hey, fuck that episode. That was terrible." So I'm going to assume that it was not the most offensive thing at the least.
That said, less sexual exploitation is not zero. And I will say, not that the Mirror Darkly, you know, ab fest wasn't appropriate given the Mirror Universe's known uniform policy, but I do think they kind of crossed the line into exploitation when they decided to have Mirror T'Pol and Mirror Hoshi have a knife fight with each other while they were in heels and midriffs and talking shit to each other about the men they've slept with. I'm like, okay, I think you're just kind of doing that to do that. I don't think you're serving the plot. Like, even like Hoshi, like sleeping around, ultimately actually was her plan, right? Like, to get into the confidences of powerful men and then manipulate them into doing what she wanted and then ultimately taking advantage of those circumstances to seize power for herself. But the knife fight, that was just nakedly exploitive.
I would have liked to see one have killed the other in that hallway fight.
Like Hoshi'd actually kill T'Pol?
Yeah, I think that would have been a good line to cross and, again, get away with really leaning into the what if else worlds, like anything's on the table.
Especially because T'Pol's fate in that episode is just completely unresolved. Like, she gets captured and then you don't hear anything about it. Cause like Archer succeeds in his plan and then Hoshi poisons him and takes over and it's over. So you could have just had Hoshi kill her and that could have just been the end of her plot line there.
Right. And that's the writing staff being too cautious, not knowing if anybody ever would go back to that well, because Archer's never shown to be dead. Reed is never shown to be dead, despite the fact he got blown up. Who knows what happened to Hoshi? Like, there's too many. They do a lot of crazy shit, but there's nothing final. And I think that seeing a main cast member kill another main cast member would have been a fun use or a potent use of the Elseworlds backdrop. My sexual exploitation award is going to go to Perseus nipple shots. And this, ooh, is something.
I forgot about those. Oh, they were out and proud, man. And that's a cold set.
You know, when you've got the 1080p and you're actually getting a chance to watch this stuff in high def, like, nipples are not camouflaged, and everybody on that set knows when someone has hard nipples, and so it's not like, oh, we didn't notice. What a, you know, it's, this isn't Uhura drinking out of a cup in the background because, you know, they didn't yell action loud enough for Nicole Nichols to hear, like, them making her wear this ripped up sports bra with her nipples rock hard the whole time did not fit in. Like, she's not a seductress. She's smart, and she was a bad bitch who could tear dudes up. And ultimately, she was a good person who was loyal to Soong and not a complete fucking monster. Putting her nipples on display was there for the one reason, and I don't think it needed to be there.
As much as she was a femme fatale, and I think they used all of that correctly in the dynamic that she had with the other Augment characters. Yeah, you're calling the ball. It's correct.
And again, her nipple shots, I would say, are still paltry in comparison to what they did with Jolene Blaylock and, like, you know, Carbon Creek and a lot of the other nonsense. Like, season four, I'm curious if one of the UPN mandates was sex in bold underlined several times, and that's, you know, them straying away from that at least excuse the main cast from a lot of, again, just cheap low blows.
Top three episodes of the season, Peter. Mine, actually very easy for me to come up with this list. Number one was Cold Station 12. Number two is Demons. Number three is In a Mirror Darkly Part 2. I picked Part 2 because I do love the extraordinarily accurately rendered TOS era sets and sound effects. And the fact you get to watch a Constitution class ship just wreck everything.
Yeah, I would like to go back and rewatch those.
I mean, Cold Station 12, the best performances of the season. Just great work by Brent Spiner and, you know, the whole using the murder tube, like, scene. As much as we laugh about the existence of the murder tube, his going through trying to get Dr. Lucas to give up the goods and his inability to cross the line, his realization that, you know, his creations slash children have no such limitations. And then Archer coming in and then seeing the devastation that's been wrought and having that scene with him in front of everyone of like, ah, I see you've learned the fucking lesson here, Dr. Soong. Ain't that a fucking tragedy? It had to happen now. Like, I mean, just all of that was super well done by everybody. So I just feel like that's the best episode of Enterprise. I don't think it's close. It's definitely the best episode of season four. Demons is the best part of the finale. Just RoboCop is super good in that.
Yeah.
His villain speeches are amazing. And like I said, I already told you what I like about In a Mirror Darkly Part 2. And if I were to do a runner-up, I thought about this a lot. I think I would probably pick Home. I'm a sucker for a, you know, PTSD story. I wish we could have seen more of Archer and Hernandez together. And I felt like that grounded the show back into what it ended up doing for the rest of the season, which is, here's Archer. He has figured some shit out and he's going to deal with it and he's going to go and seize his destiny, you know?
Hernandez gets underused this season, and that's give me these fucking wishes, and I would wish season one and season two right the fuck off the map, open up with season three, make season four season two, and then whenever Hernandez finally gets Columbia out into space, give me many episodes of Columbia coming to Enterprise's aid or Enterprise having to bail Columbia out, and that is the birth of the modern Starfleet, where these captains have some sort of a resource that they can call in and that there's a strength in numbers. And it's this building of, you know, taming the frontier, basically. I do want to comment real quick on Demons. RoboCop's speeches are baller. The the plot idea is great, but there's so many plot holes in Demons that just I can't get around, like dumb for the sake of dumb. And I'll explore some of those later. It's still great, though. And it's weird to talk about Enterprise. Again, I've got a 5-point system that goes from trash, bad, meh, good, and great. For the first time ever, 0 trash episodes, 2 bad episodes, 1 meh episode, 8 good episodes, 11 great episodes. Like,
Jesus. That's, wow. I think I would say that there were 2 bad episodes, and then 1 trash episode. But
well, we'll get into those. But my good episodes, I went also with Cole. And again, it's hard to say what episodes, because it's really arcs. There's so much bleed through.
Oh, there is. I mean, it's like everything, like you said, so much of it is so good. You could just name the whole fucking season. If you say the Augments arc, it's like, oh shit, you named 3 episodes.
So you have to pick the best of it, right? And I'm right there with you on Cold Station 12. And I think really you can take any of the episodes where we had to split it into 2 parts because there was so much stuff there to discuss is really a testament. And anybody out there who would ever write us off and just say that, you know, we're 2 curmudgeons that are just out to make, you know, poop and fart jokes and shit all over Star Trek. And that's our thing, is that we're just, you know, guys, just it's jokes and that we hate Trek. Like, take the fact that we're splitting episodes into 2 fucking podcasts where it's like arguably boring episodes or whatever. It's just because it's that lore heavy and good. So yeah, Cold Station 12, probably the best episode for me out of this season. Mirror Darkly 1, because again, I love seeing everybody be shitty to each other to the degree that they are under Forrest's command.
Yeah. You get to see Von Armstrong get to do all the things too.
Right. But you get the full picture. You get them on the Enterprise a little bit, and you get really the best taste of the Mirror universe, like point before they go off the rails with Defiant. And then Awakening, because it just does all the favors in the world to this Vulcan story arc that has spanned all of Enterprise and through season 1 and season 2 been the best parts, and to fully explore all of that. It's great payoff, lots of great world building, great T'Pol stuff. Everything is super good.
I think Awakening and The Forge are fantastic, and I wouldn't have put them in my top 5. That's how good the season is. I think those episodes are excellent. I think they would have been the top 2 episodes of any other season of Enterprise and most seasons of Voyager. That they are not in my top 5 of this season.
My special mention goes to United, which brought the Tellarites and the Andorians together. And again, just a really good Federation builder.
Yeah,
with
a pivotal knife fight that brought the Federation together.
And again, great use of the Romulans as a backdrop mechanic. I'm amazed that you don't have Observer Effect on your top 3 for as much as you ranted about it.
We're embarrassed by choice, right? Like, I loved Observer Effect. I loved how each time they shift into different bodies, you've got your actors having to act in an entirely different way. The idea of humans having this special sauce that gets kind of developed over the course of the episode. Yeah, I absolutely do love it. 100%. Was it embarrassing riches? There's 11 great episodes, Peter. I can only pick 3. So I picked my 3 favorite.
I don't even want to really even give bottom 3 the time of day. It's so obvious. We've got better conversations to have. If you're out there and Stormfront 1, Stormfront 2, and these are the voyages, aren't the obvious bottom picks out there?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you. There's nothing else.
Give Jonathan Archer a call and tell him wherever you just banged your fucking head, because you're on some primo concussives.
Yeah, easiest conversation in the world to have. Order is the only thing that you could possibly talk about, and I don't think that order matters very much. I will stand by what I said. I think these are the voyages are not as bad as people say. I don't think it would be in the bottom 3 of any other season, but
maybe, my gosh, season 3? What were the low points on 3? bird people.
There was the Hoshi-Ho episode with Count Molestula. There was the bird episode. There was the Discount Westworld episode. There was some fucking stinkers in season three that we did not enjoy. So, but that said, yeah, there's only three bad episodes. We all know what they are. I will take this moment to talk about how I think the worst episode is actually Stormfront Part 2, and that is because they just speedrun so hard to try and clean up the fucking temporal Cold War plotlines, and you never have to deal with it again. They just make indefensible, completely illogical decisions that I think clearly make it the worst episode of the season. Up to and including killing off poor Silic for no reason except we don't want to use him anymore.
That's the second biggest character death that I think gosh, I don't know. Yeah, no, because Degra died season three. Killing Degra season four, right up there with killing Trip, I think. You could have got
Silic, yeah.
You could have got a lot of good mileage off of that. Speaking of dying, sometimes dying's fun.
Right.
Sometimes dying brings a laugh. Best comedic act of violence.
It's not too much of an act of violence, but I think Big Show or Ryan grabbing Jolene Blaylock and like lifting her up like a trophy in a way that was so cartoonish you thought it was like a doll.
I thought Jolene Blaylock refused to be picked up and shown off.
But that's not really violent. So I guess my real choice is Soong tasing Archer. And then Archer, just because he's been through so much brain trauma, he's just unaffected and still chases it down and whoops his ass.
Soong tases a lot. I like Soong tasing his own neck. Like, he really got the mileage out of that taser.
Yeah.
My best act of comedic violence was when Rick Berman snuck up behind season four and stabbed it in the back.
Just the last second.
Yeah, like,
what if it's a Pegasus sequel? We'll get Brett Spiner to do a voiceover cameo. It'll be great.
My real one, and I actually had even forgotten about it. It's like Stormfront was so fucking stupid. I tried to forget as much of it as I could, but yeah, that Travis Mayweather, the Nazi clown car shuttle pod, where like 15 Nazis get in the shuttle pod 2 or whatever, and then they fucking blow it up.
Oh, Hans, come stand very close to me inside this space.
Sit on my lap. And now you sit on my lap. And then he sits on your lap. Lay down so we can get... No, no, get out. Everybody get back in and we will all lay down and stack like the Lincoln logs. What is poking me in my... Get your elbow. Oh, that is not an elbow. That is a C4 brick.
It is the only shuttlecraft explosion in Enterprise, and it does squad wipe a bunch of Nazis.
Of all the shuttles that blow up in Voyager, not a single shuttle pod explosion had even one Nazi, let alone 14 Nazis in one three-seater. The only thing that scene was really missing was going in the wrong door and then cutting to an interior shot as they come down the stairs, further reinforcing that nobody on that show realizes it's like non-Euclidean doors to get in, right?
Right.
Speaking of non-Euclidean, best OSHA violation.
So there's only one choice for this, and we know what it is, but I'm going to offer an alternative that I found pretty funny. And that is that there's a lack of lockout tagout on the warp core because Kelby was able just to like go up to a console and try and blow the whole fucking ship up like out of nowhere. Just, well, really? You just like go to a random console and blow the whole fucking place up? Like, we're not protecting that ability whatsoever. Just gonna just do it from anywhere.
I needed the scene where Trip has to tell Archer what happened and Archer to like flip on like what he there's not like a password.
Right.
I thought after the space Al-Qaeda came in and deleted our entire fucking database without a password that, you know, we were past the point where it was just free access anywhere. Like, lock this ship down.
Yeah. But what's the real answer, Peter? The
real answer is Cold Station 12. I was going to put the poison tube the man-sized tube that fills with poison, yes, all of the poisons.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, on thinking about it deeper, because then they put in the HE, it's Cold Station 12. It's the whole goddamn station.
Yeah.
I fully believe, after all of our discussions, that at some point, Terran Empire engineers got displaced in mainline, and they just got a job, and they kept their mouth shut, and somehow they ended up building fucking Cold Station 12. And that's why that place is a Milton Bradley-style death trap where...
Guys, I have a great idea for a new facility. Here, listen, hear me out. We're going to put every single virulent communicable disease that exists in the galaxy on this space station, and right next to it, all of the embryos of psychotic fascist super soldiers right next to them. Also, there will be a tube. Why? We're going to be able to put diseases in it. How big will this tube be? Good question. Big enough to put you in it.
By you, I mean jump to conclusions, guy. This is going to be a very round tube.
Yeah. Like, no, I mean you. You specifically. You may go in.
What are we going to call this? I'm thinking Resident Evil 12.
It is the fucking Umbrella Mansion is less dangerous than Cold Station 12.
The Resident Evil station required hella passwords and
physical and keys. You needed to find that key so you could open up the door, so you could get to the puzzle on the staircase or whatever the fuck.
Here's the mashup episode I need. I need them to find my favorite loose plot thread, which we'll mention on the series rip, but the bird plague, right?
Mm-hmm.
From the bird that they just kept somewhere in Phlox's fucking sick bay. God knows where that is after the hell that Enterprise went through towards the end of season 3. You take that bird plague, you hatch the augments, you grow them up, then you give them the bird plague, and now you've got like
you have bird people augments.
Yeah, they can actually fly. I would have liked to see the bird plague reemerge at some point along the Affliction storyline, where like that becomes Phlox's solution to stopping the Klingon plague, as they just turn them all into bird people because that halts the fucking mutation. But now that entire Klingon colony turns into bird people. There was a good story to tell to explain why they kept this ridiculous virus, but
the one piece of continuity they could not return to.
Hey, broken continuity. Now's a great time to talk about the biggest plot botch.
I mean, it's got to be the awkward speed run with Nazis and the special guest star extra villain of the temporal Cold War, just so you could shove it off the fucking stage left. I mean, it was just, none of it worked. All of it was stupid. All of it was clearly just, this never actually managed to do what we wanted to do. It actively damaged the show, actually, for the most part. So we're just gonna end it. We'll be Nazis. And then we'll be done. It sucked.
The Nazis just there to try to be a smoke and mirror show to like, oh my god, I can't wait to see the beginning of season 4. Like, stupid play by Braga or whoever was behind it. The temporal Cold War is my biggest plot botch. It's done at this point, more or less. You know, it's wrapped up by episode 2. This thing is season 1, 2, and 3 problems. But it's just a big fucking waste of time. You could have done all of season 3 without the sphere builders actually being a part of the temporal Cold War. Yeah.
You could have cashed this out because the sphere builders exist out of dimension and it fucks with everything. And they kind of do that a little bit, but you could have actually like ended the plot line there with Daniel saying, oh shit, I can't help you. Goodbye.
You could have, if your goal as Manny Coto was just to wrap this fucking thing up so you could tell the important stories that matter, the cold intro into episode 1 could have been Daniel showing up saying, I don't know what happened, but this has all been resolved. John, thanks for your help. You're going to do great things. Peace out. And then told a good story with the other 50 minutes of that episode. And it would have seemed like a big fucking just stupid and miserable and bad. But instead, they wasted two episodes out of a season that only ran for 22 episodes. And God, you know, look at everything else in this season. What great stories could you have told with those two episodes that instead I'm watching Bobby Bacala shoot at dinosaurs or whatever the fuck was happening? Like, maybe Bobby Bacala
spawn camping Nazis.
Right. Like, happens. There's a couple cool things that happen through there, but just the temporal Cold War as a whole was a plot botch. I can't remember what it specifically was, but like we worked it. You could have fucking made RoboCop involved somehow.
Right.
Anything you could have done differently would have been better than what we actually ended up getting with this fucking temporal Cold War. We came up with a couple ideas. Again, I can't remember what they are off the top of my head, but they were way fucking better. We didn't get those. Fuck that. And then, again, Terra Prime had plot holes, specifically with Paxton disease and the way they handled it. The entire thing regarding the baby from creating it to killing it. It's such a good episode. It perseveres through all that, but throwing temporal Cold War out, that's the only thing that really jumps out to me as a plot that was not meticulously thought out and airtight.
Something that was meticulously thought out and airtight was the best episode in tone. Is Cold Station 12. It's the best episode of the season and it's the best episode because its tone is awesome. That it balances so many competing impulses. You know, you've got Soong and he's driven and he has this vision for humanity and he wants to it can happen, but what are his potential limits of what he's willing to do? How is it that Atom Smasher starts to sense that weakness and make his move? How does Archer respond to this? How does the one augment that didn't get any gifts treat that? How does Soong deal with it? You know, they really did a great job of hitting that spot where the audience really knows that, oh shit, the augments are all little Hitlers, right? Like, and now the stakes are much higher because the worst is true.
You know, we're over here sucking Cold Station 12's dick left and right. Was that thing received by the audience to the degree that we're appreciating it?
Hard to know, right? Like, again, I didn't watch this contemporaneously, and I never had the opportunity to discuss it in this kind of detail.
Yeah, but listen, you wade through the human filth of Twitter and Reddit, subreddit, Star Trek's, like, you don't see this thing getting called out or anybody really talking about it ever?
No, Enterprise continues to be just forgotten, particularly season 4. People just don't think about it, don't talk about it. And it's a shame because it's just solid gold the whole way through. So good, it made us hate Strange New Worlds because of the way that it just hand waves all of this trauma like it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Best episode in tone for me. I agree. It's Cold 12, you know, for everything that you mentioned and everything that we went over the course of two episodes of ours. I might want to talk about Observer Effect though, cause we haven't really brought it up heavily. It's not an action episode. It's not a flashy episode. It is, a cast playing with itself. Everybody did their homework. Scenes were rehearsed heavily.
Yeah.
There's big stakes. The end of it is too rushed and there's loose ends. They could have stuck the landing a little bit better, but
Archer has a great scene there.
It does. And it encapsulates how good he became in season 4 as a whole. It's not him up in front of Starfleet or the Federation giving a great speech. It's him pleading the case of humanity to the cold unknown.
Yeah.
And that's what every Star Trek captain needs to be able to do is champion humanity.
We've had a change of heart about Archer. But who gets the change of heart award this season, Peter? I think it's Archer actually for a change, because him getting Serac in his head really led him to being really cool with Vulcans and being able to tell T'Pol how to do mind melds. And I thought that that was a really clever move on their part of literally putting Vulcan Jesus in his head, and suddenly, you know what, he kind of gets him.
It's Archer across the board. It's Archer who has accepted his fate to be the unifier and the diplomat instead of just the simple explorer. And that was the fate that he fights all of season 3, where he is a soldier. And we talked about it before, you know, he becomes a Klingon. He becomes a Vulcan. He tells the Tellarites to knock their shit off. He puts Shran in his place. This is a guy who is comfortable in his own skin and in command of himself, and a complete 180 from even season 3 Archer. For me, Soong's change of heart is pretty important, pulling his head out of his ass and, you know, the universe's most smartest human realizing that he has been tragically wrong was a very potent display. I think my favorite change of heart, though, is Suval turning and doing a heel face turn as we find out that he is actually this super pro-humanity benefactor that we never knew we had. And maybe it's pure retcon, but it works so good and it hits so hard, especially when he is willing to ride or die, use a mind meld, which is super dirty, and then go in front of the fucking High Council and confront the dirt. Like, amazing stuff.
Yeah. I think both of those choices are completely respectable. First and foremost, we talk a lot about Cold Station 12, but the augments, which is the third part where we actually only did one episode, that is a great like ending to his story. Like Persis kind of like besting him out, him trying to preserve her life, failing, understanding he's completely failed. He's going to have to destroy them all. You know, just fantastic story arc. Really is the best arc of the season. I don't, we didn't put that as a category, but I would make the augments arc my favorite arc of the season. And then Saval really makes the Vulcan trilogy work. Because he does the, yeah, I fucked a dog, let me tell you about it, like level of not giving a fuck. We're to the point where Trip is like, I never knew that you liked this so much. And he said, thank you. Like, I appreciate that I was able to hold that back as well as I did. Mm-hmm. But you know he's motivated to do this because, you know, his friend died for him. You know, Admiral Forrest died to protect him. And it meant something. I don't know if
you would call it a friend. Like, how close were they really?
Close enough. They'd always work together. I assume, like, they're probably as, you know,
I read Forrest dying, not because Suval was his BFF,
but because it was his duty. Yeah.
Not just his duty, but just that Forrest dies as an exemplar of humanity, where it's, we are not the Klingons. We have compassion. We do the right. And that's what we do, the right thing. Maybe it's duty. Maybe it's morals. We do the right thing. You have been a real pain in our ass for the past 3 years, but I'm jumping on the grenade, or, you know, in this case, I'm covering you because it was the right thing to do. It cost me my life, and it wasn't Forrest who died there. It was a glimpse into the future of humanity and Suval saying, we need these guys.
Yes. And to the point where straight from the beginning, he goes to Archer and say, these guys are going to try and fuck with you. They're going to try and give you the runaround. They're going to try and keep you. And whatever fucking dirt that we need to do to solve this, I am down. We're doing it.
Great. Give me goosebumps. That was a good one.
Lastly, Peter, before we wrap up our rip, we have a classic of the V'ger Please genre that we have to give out. Perhaps our trademark, our calling card, the weakest shit award for season 4. I think we have well-developed answers.
And I want to go ahead and say right now, these weakest shit nominations pale in comparison to...
They do.
You know, this is a easy season to say great things and have genuine good conversations, and it's a harder season to point fingers and laughs. But there's still a couple chinks in the armor.
There are. I wrote one down. I'm going to abandon it for a different one because I've thought about it more as we've talked. The weakest shit to me is that the actual bad guys at the end of the temporal Cold War are dudes you literally never saw before, who you suddenly have to have who they are explained to you while you're resolving the plot, whose entire intention is to open up a green portal, because that's going to create some kind of circumstance by which the temporal Cold War is lost.
These are Harry Kim's Canadian villains. You wouldn't know them, but they're a big deal.
I don't think you can find shit weaker than that in season four. You know, like that reeked of, that was so weak. It reeked of desperation.
It was cartoonish in a bad way. That was, you might as well just had fucking Skeletor be the bad guy.
Yeah.
My weakest shit nomination, I'm happy to say, you know, there's nothing that really boiled my blood, and that's unfathomable for
it is. It's rare
for Enterprise. Going back, I listened to the Orion's episode again, Bound. Again, the resolution on that, it good episode. I liked it. The resolution was a fucking crime. The fact that it's Trip coming up with the gun and saving the day and not just shooting the fucking Orions. Again, I the biggest plot botch in season four is that everybody forgets a phaser has a stun setting. Nobody shoots RoboCop. Nobody shoots RoboCop's dragon. You know, they let Trip and Reed get shot in the fucking back. Whatever. The real weakest shit is the way that fucking Trip dies, and I refuse to even acknowledge. I think that's what I'm doing. I'm just going to refuse to acknowledge these other voyages even exist.
Right. It can't be the weakest shit of the season because it's not real.
I disbelieve. But Orion's Bound, that was a great episode. Hoshi and T'Pol being completely robbed of agency at the end of that episode is atrocious. There's no reason why T'Pol didn't shoot those girls. There's no reason Hoshi couldn't fucking sack it up for 6 seconds. All right, this is the same Hoshi who had parasites eating her fucking brains while the Zindi coerced her into doing space math to let them turn the Death Star on.
And she purposefully fucked up the space math while they were eating her brains to try and buy them more time.
She fucked up the math. She tried to jump off a goddamn ledge, which, you know, that's going to lead into the series rip where I'm going to have an award for the best fall. Expect to hear more about those bridges. But this is a person who has proven that they have amazing mental fortitude. As much as a weenie whiner as Hoshi is, she fights off Count Pop-Tart. She fights off the brain bugs. The fact she can't get it together for fucking 3 seconds to go over there and roundhouse kick some bitches.
Right. When we know she's capable of kicking.
Right. We've seen it. You can't have a guy beat up girls, but girls can beat up girls, as Hoshi and T'Pol showed us. Like, robbing the ladies of the heroic moment in that was a real just nasty travesty. And
we know Hoshi knows like fucking martial arts because she did beat up a guy and then got beat up by a different guy in the Klingon episodes when Phlox got kidnapped.
Yeah. Listen, man, there's no reason for it. Or like you said, you did have the right of it. Show her being so overwhelmed by their pheromones that right. She's basically like, can't even make eye contact. Either use her to reinforce like these pheromones are a big fucking deal, or have her pull out some action judo. That's my weakest shit. They robbed her. But that's really the ongoing theme for Enterprise, is that Hoshi doesn't matter. And T'Pol is not the Terminatrix that Seven of Nine is until she does need to kick ass. Like that fucking miserable episode where the Klingons are giving the Texas oil miners a hard time and she beats everybody's ass.
Well, what beat everyone's ass is season four of Enterprise. It's hard to say it more clearly than we already have. This is in terms of quality of its episodes. I think you can actually quantify it as the best season of Star Trek that we have yet watched. And hopefully you have all availed yourself of the opportunity to watch it along with us. If you somehow haven't and you stumble across this, let us be clear. Sit down and watch it. And you should sit down and listen to us on V'ger Please next week as we send all of Enterprise off. Expect a long barn burner of an episode. We're going to have a lot to talk about. And we'll see you then.